This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The intention of this series of shiurim on the 613 mitzvot, and of course we're not doing all of the 613. We dealt with Pesach for over one or two shiurim, maybe three. There are probably 15 or 16 or more of the 613 mitzvot deal with Pesach. So those we're classifying in one group. Also, one of the things we're coming to next is the Ten Commandments, and we've already done the Ten Commandments as a series, so I'll refer you to those, to that series. We're not going to go through the Ten Commandments again. But the purpose in the shiur is not to give you information regarding the performance of the mitzvahs, but rather to learn from the mitzvahs principles that apply to the rest of our lives. So today we're going to gain a new insight into the mitzvah of Shabbos, or one aspect of the mitzvah of Shabbos, but the intention again is not that you should change the way you keep Shabbos based on the shir, but that you acquire a principle that you're able to infuse into a lot of the things that you do. Because sometimes people take me very literally and then they start changing things, and doesn't always work that well. And I'll point it out to you later on as we get into it. The mitzvah that we're dealing with is the 24th mitzvah in the system of counting of the Sefer HaChinuch. And it comes in this week's Parsha and Beshalach. And here's how it takes place. It's at the time of the introduction of the manna of Mon. Moshe instructs the people to gather them on and not to leave any over for the next day, and not to take more than one omer each. And some did take more. It worked out that everybody got an omer irrespective of how much they gathered. So they didn't listen to Moshe and they left it till the next day, and it became wormy, it decayed, it degenerated, and it caused a foul smell. And Moshe was angry with him and said, I told you, don't leave any over, consume it all, that's what needs to be done. And then they would go and collect the mon every morning, use it that day, and there would be fresh mon the next day. On Friday, they gathered a double portion. And they came to Moshe and they said, we went out the normal way, we gathered the manna, but we brought it home and there was twice as much as there usually is. Moshe said, that's exactly how it has to be, because tomorrow is Shabbos, and therefore bake what you want to bake and cook what you want to cook of the mon. Whatever you leave over, leave till tomorrow. This is the one time when you may leave manna over for the next day, where you don't have to consume it all on the day itself. And they did so, and it did not degenerate, it did not decay and become wormy the next day. Moshe says, eat it today, the manna that you have left over from Friday, eat today, because today is Shabbos. Today you will not find any manna in the field. 6 days you will gather manna, and on the seventh day, it's a Shabbos, there will be no more. And it was on the seventh day, and some of the people went out to gather, and they did not find any. And God said to Moshe, how long are you going to disobey me and to keep my mitzvahs? And Moshe says to the people, Hashem has given you, this is the important verse, Re'u ki Hashem nosan lochem ha-Shabbos. Behold, see that God has given you Shabbos. Al kein hu noisen lochem bayom hashishi lechem yomayim. That's why he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Shavu ish tachtov. Each man stay where you are. Al yetze ish mimakoma, no man should go out from his place by Yom HaShvi on the seventh day. So here, wrapped up in the law of the manna, we have a law which the Sefer HaChinuch articulates as V'hi this law is shenimnonu shelo elaleches b'shabbos chutz ligvulim yiduin. We are instructed in this mitzvah not to go beyond certain predetermined boundary lines on Shabbos. So this has got nothing to do with the law of traveling in a car. This has nothing to do with the law of carry. Even if you're walking, there are boundaries beyond which you cannot walk. There is a restriction on the distance out of the town that one may walk. There are different views as to what the Torah restricts and what the rabbis restrict. But the way we work it is 2,000 cubits, which is about 1 kilometer, just over half a mile, outside of the city limits. So you can walk as long as you want inside the city, but you cannot walk more than a mile beyond the city. That becomes very important when you go out into the country and you spend the weekend, you spend the Shabbos at a camp, and you want to go hiking. And you think, what's better than to go for a walk on Shabbos? Can be an Issur D'oraisa. That's what can be. Well, it can be you're transgressing a Torah law by doing that. If you go more than a kilometer outside of the camp, you can go around the camp as many times as you want. But if you go into the hills and you walk a kilometer away from the camp, then you're over. Everyone has transgressed the sort of tachumim of going beyond those boundary lines. That's also the view of the Rambam. The Ramban has the view that law is not a Doraisa, it's not a Torah law. It's a law of the Rabbanon. The rabbis introduced that law of not walking beyond. And this really, the law over here of Al Yetze Ish Mimakoimo really means, or should be read as Al Yetze Ish Mimakoimo. What we're concerned about here is the law of carrying rather than the law of walking. So the issue is, are we worried about people when Moshe says to the people, you shouldn't go out, God has given you the Shabbos, and therefore, Shavu Ish Tachtov, each man stay where you are. Is he saying, stay where you are, do not go out there to collect, because going out there is a transgression? Or is he saying, there's no point in going out there, because you can't bring it back, because carrying is a transgression? Be that as it may, carrying we know is an Issur D'oraisa. Carrying something, and we'll define in a moment what type of carrying, is a law of the Torah. One isn't permitted to carry, and walking beyond the predetermined boundaries is also forbidden. According to the Rambam, it's forbidden by the Torah. According to the Ramban, it's forbidden by the rabbis. But in any event, it's forbidden, and it's on those laws that we're going to focus a little bit this evening. The law that restricts our movements, that restricts where we walk, and that restricts what we carry, where we carry things to, where we move things to. Our own movement and the movement of objects are restricted on Shabbos. And why would that be? Because normally one thinks of restrictions on movement as restrictions on freedom. If one isn't free to move, what is one really free to do? That's house arrest. You've got to stay where you are. Shvu ish tachtav. Each person stay where you are. Is that a Shabbos? What is the purpose? Why is there such a focus on remaining in a confined area? And we see that it has all sorts of side benefits from a community point of view, that because there are these restrictions on travel and on movement and on walking and on carrying, people live near their shuls. They build communities. That's one of the things that creates community, and many a Gentile society has tried to do that too, has tried to build communities. And it's very difficult to do that, because what are you building it around? And sometimes a community starts because they're like-minded people, the same kind of age, same age children, and they buy houses in a new area that's just been built, and they build the facilities that those particular people need and want, but then those people start selling, and some move out, some stay there, and before very long, there's a mixture of people once again, and you haven't really got community. And the concept of community, clearly a lot of Jewish community comes not only from the laws of Chesed, that we've got all the laws of kindness and charity, which other religions have too, a lot of it comes from Shabbos, that there is an enforced requirement of living around the place where you're going to be on Shabbos, the people you're going to be with, and the community at which you're going to daven, in which you're going to pray on Shabbos. The idea of many minyanim growing up in the same neighborhood, while quite attractive in terms of offering variety and various different options, and therefore quite refreshing, actually destroys community. Because the whole idea of community is you live around, that you don't live all over the place, that you live around the place that where you daven. And that's how it really used to be, that the shul, the Beis HaMedrash, the school, whatever it was, used to be the focus point of the community. People would live around that. Today you have situations where people live in Jewish neighborhoods, even in religious neighborhoods, and it's not community, because they daven all over the place, and again, sometimes they don't even speak to each other, and you daven at this place, not at that place, and it becomes destructive in terms of community. So sometimes the very essence of community that gets damaged. The way it used to be was that there was community built around, it was a village, or if it was a town, there were different sections of the town, and in each community there was a rov, there was a rabbi, and a community, and that's it. If you didn't like that, you went and lived somewhere else. You didn't start another shul in the same community. That's how you destroy communities. And what we have done today is, while we have built variety and we've built a lot of richness through that, we have destroyed community. Where you have multiple shuls, multiple places of davening and of community gathering, usually you have very little commitment to any of them. People are sometimes members at all of them, and many people are members at none of them. Which of course you can't do if there's only one, and everybody knows that you're not a member. If there's six shuls or eight shuls, everybody thinks you're a member somewhere else, and I call them gypsy Jews. They go, they wander from place to place like gypsies. They daven Shachris here, they daven Mincha there, they daven Shabbos here. Nobody quite knows where they are. Nobody misses them if they're there, if they're not there. Nobody asks them for donations because everybody thinks they belong somewhere else. And they're able to live their lives with the illusion of community, but without investment in community. Because investment in community requires a commitment, and a commitment means this is my place and nowhere else. I survive or fall with this place. So I want this place to be good. So I'm prepared to build this place, I'm prepared to invest in this place, but if one's always a visitor, if one's always wandering around from shul to shul and from place to place, nobody invests. So then the shuls have to go to outside donors, and then they have to start raising money from outside people who have nothing to do with the community. It's not meant to be that way. We've destroyed the whole concept of community by being too free with the way we establish communities. But that's how we've developed, and that's how it is. But quite apart from the social aspect of the benefits of restricting movement on Shabbos, there is a whole new dimension that we'll introduce today, and that is the Sforno makes the point here of noting, if you look at the wording here, Ru'u si ki Hashem nosam lochem haShabbos. Notice that Hashem has given you the Shabbos. The Sforno says, Hisboinenu, contemplate this, think a little. Ki Hashem nosan lochem haShabbos ve'enzu mitzvah bilvad aval hi matona. This is not just a mitzvah. This is also a gift. That you've got to view Shabbos as a gift. Now, that's all fine, but why is the gift aspect of Shabbos mentioned here at the point of restricting movement? That's like saying to somebody, I'm going to give you a gift, you're under house arrest, and you should thank me, this is a great gift. You may not go anywhere, you may not travel anywhere, stay where you are, and be thankful that I've given you this wonderful gift. We would say, let me decide when I want to travel, where I want to travel, when I want to go. That's no gift. It's interesting that in one of the most restrictive passages of the Shabbos laws, it doesn't say at the time where we're supposed to make kiddush and where we're supposed to have pleasure on Shabbos and enjoy the Shabbos. That's not when it says, here's the gift. When does it tell us that this is a gift? Shavu ishtachtav. Now I've given you this gift. Stay where you are. Don't move. What is the nature of this gift and what is its relationship to movement? Let's look first at the movement of objects, the movement of things, which is one of the laws of Shabbos, one of the 39 forbidden actions on Shabbos, that the Gemara and the Rishonim find most difficult to understand. Because there's nothing really creative in movement. All the other 39 principles that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos involve some form of technological creativity. You're changing an object, you're doing something to an object, you're improving it, you're repairing it, you're in some way changing its form. The law of movement is not so at all. The object is the same. You take an object and you move it from a private domain to a public domain, or vice versa, or you move it 4 amos, some 6 feet, in a public domain. That's an issur d'oraisa. Although the object has not been changed, you've done nothing to the object. Why is that prohibited? It's very seldom in modern times. It's very seldom that something really original is published. I think that's so in all spheres, but unfortunately it's become so even in the sphere of Torah. There are lots and lots of books being published at the moment, but most of them are rehashes of old stuff. It's reprints, and it's researched into reprints, and it's laid out in a new way, and it's new manuscripts discovered of old things, and it's classified and it's indexed. Most of what is published today is regurgitation, simplifying, expanding, but there's hardly anything. When you go into the bookshops, you'll hardly find a book that is radically new. This little book is radically new, and I guarantee you nobody's heard of it. And even in the Torah learning world, very few people will have heard of it. It's a little book that's called The Secret of Shabbos. Very difficult book, very, very deep, very difficult, written in Hebrew. It's called The Secret of Shabbos, Silence and Speech. That's the name. And it's written by a very, very good friend of mine, a rabbi called Rabbi Yitzchak Lifshitz. His father was one of my teachers. And it was quite interesting. I was at his father's house at their home once. So he had just turned bar mitzvah and he was going through a rebellious adolescent stage. And I think it was after the meal, he didn't want a bench or something like that. And his father said, "You don't have to. Last week, if you didn't want a bench, I would have forced you to bench because you weren't bar mitzvah and it would have been my problem. But now you are bar mitzvah. You don't want a bench, it's between you and God. What do I care?" And I remember you walked out and he didn't bench, and our Lifshitz said to me, come, put our ears to the bedroom door, and we heard him benching. And this young man has subsequently become a very great rabbinic authority and a very innovative mind, and he's written this little book that's come out quietly and without fanfare. And every page of it is just full of brilliant new insights. And his definition of a melacha, of that which is forbidden on Shabbos, in Chazal it's talked about as a meleches machsheves. What's forbidden on Shabbos is a word that's very difficult to translate, and very few people translate it effectively. Meleches machsheves means work of thought. Now that isn't what's forbidden on Shabbos. You're allowed to think. You can think as much as you want. What's forbidden on Shabbos is work, practical work, technical work. So it's always been quite intriguing to me why it's called Meleches Machsheves. So people say it's because it's intentional, it's got to be intentional work, not work which is non-intentional, all sorts of reasons. But he gives a very beautiful and clear and true understanding of what that word means. Meleches Machsheves means work on an object that increases its value by the addition of an intellectual component. That's what it means. And that means any improvement. Anything, you take raw material and using your mind, your ability, you add something to it, whether it's a design function or it's an improvement or an enhancement or whatever it is. You're using your intellect to take an object and you're expressing that idea in a form that adds value to the object. And any adding of value to an object is a prohibition of the Torah on Shabbos. An example would be writing. Take paper and put some writing on it. Of course, you're always doing the melacha. Meleches machsheves means an action that adds value by adding an intellectual component to an object. So you're adding a pattern. You're adding a pattern to an object. You're painting something. You're changing its form. You're repairing it. You're putting writing on drawer and paper. You're putting an image on paper. Anything where you're taking a concept, where you're taking an idea, and you're expressing that in an action, in an object is a meleches machsheves. You're adding value to the object. The object is no longer what it used to be. It now has an intellectual component which has changed the object, and that becomes a melacha, that becomes something which on Shabbos is not permitted. What about moving something? Here comes the thing that all those who try and give reasons for the melachas and why they are and how they are stumble on that one. The 39th one. Moving something. There's no addition, there's no change of value. It's the very same object. You take an object, you take a book, and you move it from private property to public property, or vice versa. And that's an issue. What have you done? You've changed nothing. Why is that a melacha? And the Gemara still says, Tosfos brings it that that's one of the weakest of the melachas. It's the most difficult to understand. It's a borderline melacha. It's still a melacha. It's still a forbidden action. But using Rabbi Yitzchak Lipschitz's definition, it becomes very clear. There's the understanding that transport is one of the components of value adding. A lot of people make their living that way, don't they? Simply moving something from one market to another. Making something available, taking something from a place where it is of less value to a place of where it is more value. Any object has no value if it's in the wrong place. Its value is not enhanced, and sometimes its value can be entirely destroyed just by being at the wrong place. If one were unable to transport oil from the Arab lands to the industrialized world, what would the value of oil be? What is the value of oil in Saudi Arabia? Very little. There's an oversupply. It would have no value in Saudi Arabia. They don't need a millionth of what they produce. The only reason it has value is because it can be transported. The transport is what gives it its value. Take the transport away, it has no value. And the Torah recognizes the transport, that moving things from place to place is one of the ways we add value. It's one of the legitimate ways of adding value to an object. You don't have to change an object to add value. Sometimes you merely have to change the place of an object to add value to that. This applies not only in the area of physical transportation, it applies even in the area of intellectual transportation. That's how arbitrage works. When a trader notices that there's a difference in the price between one market and another market, and he buys in the one market and he sells in the other market, whether he's buying and selling currencies, or he's buying and selling securities, or he's buying and selling debt, it doesn't make any difference. From the moment he's able to notice the difference in two places, the movement from one place to another adds a value from which people make a living, from which people sometimes make a very good living. That's the issue of transport. What about on Shabbos? Leave it where it is. So what are the 39 forbidden actions? They're all actions where we transform objects, where we impose ourselves, we impose our thoughts, we impose our thinking, our ideas on things outside of us, and by doing so we transform them, we change them, and by changing them we add value to them, and that's what we're not permitted to do. There is also an element of transformation that takes place when we travel around ourselves. Just as objects are transformed by being moved and their value changes, so people are transformed, and that's why they travel. That's why people move around. That's why people go from place to place. They see things, new things. They're stimulated in new ways. They impact in different ways. But the individual's movement, the individual's travel, is also a form of impact and of change and of adding value. And so there's a restriction in movement. There is a restriction in the degree to which we transform the world on Shabbos. Shabbos is not a time, not any restriction. There's virtually a moratorium on transforming the world. Don't transform the world on Shabbos. Leave the world alone. So what are we supposed to be doing? What is the idea? What is this time of Shabbos? What are we meant to be doing? The beginning of Vayikra, there's a very strange Sifra. The Sifra says, the book of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus starts, and God called to Moshe. And the Sifra says, and then after this it says, Vayikra, called to Moshe, Vayedaber, and he spoke to Moshe. And the Sifra says, does the calling, as a precondition, that means God called him first, says, Moshe, Moshe says, yes, here I am. Then God spoke. So he invites him to conversation. Is that only when there is dibur, asks the Sifro, or is it even when there is amiro? There's a difference between dibur and amiro. They're two words that mean almost the same. Dibur is a general form of speech, and amiro is a speech directed to a particular individual. So if I'm making a speech in general, then maybe God first invites Moshe and says, I'm about to speak, Moshe, would you come? I'm giving a shir, I'm making a proclamation. But if I'm addressing you as an individual, do I need to invite you as well? And the Sifra proves yes. Even when God is addressing him as an individual, God first invites him, first makes an arrangement, calls him to the conversation. And then the Sifra goes on and says, maybe there's even a need to call him not to the conversation, but to the silences between the conversations. Strange idea. Why would you need to be invited to the silences? And the Sifra concludes, no, there's no calling. There's no need to call somebody to silence. In that case, and here's the important part of the Sifra for our purpose, v'chi mo hayu hefsekus meshamshus. So why then were there these interruptions? When God taught the Torah to Moshe, why are these interruptions? Some of them are actually recorded in the Torah. Answers the Sifra, Litain revach leMoshe, to give a space to Moshe, lehispoenein, to contemplate, ben parsha leparsha, ben inyan leinyan, between each parsha and between each subject matter. Vahare ha-devorim kal vachomer, says the Sifra, and we can make a kal vachomer. Ma im mishuhu shomea mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If somebody is hearing from God and speaks with Ruach HaKodesh, with sanctity, nevertheless, tzorich lisbonein ben parsha leparsha ben inyan inyan, he needs time to contemplate between parsha and parsha, between one subject and another. Alachas kano vekama hedyot mehedyot, when two human beings are speaking, how much more so do they actually need time to integrate, to absorb, to let it rest between subject matter and subject matter? How important is that? So what is the Sifra teaching? The value of the silent pauses in conversation between God and Moshe, and how much more so the need for silent pauses in conversation between human beings. Why? Because that's the time of to be misboine. You need silence for contemplation. If you're going to be thinking, if you're going to be absorbing, you need moments of silence. And of course, in any conversation, when one person speaking, another person needs to be listening. And listening is harder than speaking. Because speaking, you don't have to concentrate that hard. You just speak. But listening, you've got to try and figure out what somebody else is intending. To say what's in your head is easy. But to understand what somebody else is really saying, that's much harder. And we don't listen very well. We're quite good at speaking, and we're taught to speak at school, but we're not really taught to listen. What is it to hear? What is it to listen? What is it to stop? Silent, hear, integrate. And not only do you need to be silent while you're listening, says the Sifra, you need to be silent after you've heard, to give yourself a chance to have it settle down. That's why I always say to you, don't ask questions right after a shir. How can you possibly ask a question after a shir? Because there has been no integration. How can you just listen to an hour or 45 minutes of a shir and already have a question? It's not possible. It's just not possible, because there hasn't been time for contemplation. After there's been time for contemplation, and one has integrated it, and one has absorbed it, and one has challenged it within one's own existing paradigms, and one's given it some kind of context, then the questions start percolating, then the questions start bubbling up. And one finds usually in shiurim that doesn't happen. Usually if a person doesn't ask his question immediately, he doesn't ask the question later on. Why is that? Because he doesn't give himself the chance. The moment he's finished with the one, he's already on to the next thing. He's either talking or he's listening. But the silent times, the moments of silence that are so important if we're going to allow ourselves to grow from what we're hearing, the zman, the time to be misboned, and even when God is the teacher and Moshe the student, what greater clarity could there be than that? You still need time in between. It's not a function of, well, maybe he's not such a good teacher, so you need time to work it out. It's not a function of, maybe he's not such a good student, so he needs time to work it out. The greatest, most brilliant student, learning from the greatest, most brilliant teacher, still needs time to work it out. It cannot function any other way. It needs time to consider it, time to integrate it. Each person has to understand it in his own way. And we don't give ourselves that time. We don't allow ourselves that time. We need noise around us all the time. We find people that when they can, as soon as they come in, they've got to turn the television on, and they've got to get onto the phone, and there's got to be activity all the time. The ability to surround oneself with moments of silence and use that silence constructively, use that silence to integrate, to contemplate, to think a thing through, is something many of us find very difficult. Let's see that in further context. There's a lovely story in the Gemara in Brochus, where Rav Sheshes, who was blind, went together with the whole community to greet the king. There was a cynic, reformed Jew present, and in those days the reformed Jews weren't like today. Today the reformed Jews are pleasant people and kind people, and they just haven't been exposed to knowledge and learning that has made them want to be religious. But in those days they were, for they knew the Torah, and they despised it, and they chose to be that way. So they say to Rav Sheshes, the blind man, "Hatzvi l'nara, I understand that you take utensils to the river to fill them up. Kagni layo, but what would one take broken utensils to the river for? Where would one, what would be the point in that? What are you going to see the king for? You can't see, you're blind." Omele, he answered, "Tochazi, I will demonstrate to you the Yodano Tfei Minach, that I will see the king before you." Oh, this was going to be quite interesting. Chalaf Gunde Kamaiso, so there was the first band of people came by, everybody's there, and there's a band, and there's a noise, and there's sounds. Kikwa Afsho Omele Hawatiduki, and this noise comes, and this band, this whole caravan of people comes past, and the Tziduki, the cynical person, says, "Atomalka, here clearly is the king." Amalei Rav Sheshes Loka, I say, Rav Sheshes, "No, this is not the king." A second one came by, the Tzeduki said, "Here's the king." Says Rav Sheshes, "This is not the king." The third one came, and there was silence. Rav Sheshes said, "This is the king." The Tzeduki said, "How do you know? First one came by, you knew it wasn't the king. The second one came by, you knew. The third one came by, you knew it wasn't the king." He said, "Because royalty in the world works the same as God's royalty. And it says about when God came onto the mountain, it says, 'Loi beruach Hashem.' That first there was a big wind, and the prophet says, God doesn't come in the big wind, by hararuach rash, and then there was a big noise. The prophet says, 'Loi berash Hashem,' God doesn't come with a noise. Bacharash esh, and then there was fire. 'Loi be'esh Hashem,' God doesn't come with fire. Bachara esh kol demamo dako, and after the fire, there was a very silent, hard to hear, fine little sound. That's when it's God. Ki atamalku, when the king came, posach Rav Sheshes v'kumabarech leim, Rav Sheshes made the bracha. Although he couldn't see the king, he could sense the king. By what did he sense the king? He heard the silence. And we can't hear silence. We don't like silence. We feel discomforted by silence. We have to surround ourselves by noise, because noise means reality for us. And the Gemara is teaching us that reality can be found more in silence than in sound. That reality can be found more in the moments between the notes. And musical specialists know that the real drama in a piece of music is not the note, it's the space between the notes. And that's really what the essence of music is measuring the space, skipping spaces, double spaces. What you're really talking about is space between the notes, not just the timing, but the actual jump from one note to another. It's about space, it's not about the sound. Sound brings a different quality and a different rich to us, but one has to hear the silence, one has to hear what's between the notes. And some of the great artists, certainly in Oriental art and Japanese art more than anything else, the space between the strokes is more important than the strokes. The greater the artist, the less paint there is on his canvas. The greatest of all artists in Japanese art are those that have the least amount of any form, whatever. because it's the space in between. The form is just to define the space, but it's the space that has to speak. It's the silence between the sounds where one will find the godliness. And Shabbos is a day where the Yerushalmi says, Ma Kodesh Baruch Hu Shovas Mimamar. What did God stop doing on Shabbos? He stopped creating the world. He created the world on the first day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. But how did He create the world? Vayomer Hashem, God said. So what happened on Shabbos then? God stopped talking. That's what He did on Shabbos. He stopped talking. Therefore, says the Gemara Yerushalmi, in the same way as God stops talking on Shabbos, Af ata shavois mimama, stop talking. One day a week, stop talking. Just stop talking. Why? Because then you might start listening. If for one day a week you didn't talk, for one day a week you would listen. Amar Rabbi Hanina said, and this is the part that I said to you, don't start changing your Shabbos. So don't start everybody being silent and not greeting each other on Shabbos. And not, there's a life principle here. I'm not talking about your Shabbos. We're talking about the dimension of Shabbos, which is possibly unfamiliar to you. Understand the dimension and learn how to use it in all areas, not just Shabbos. Midochak hitiru lishol shalom b'Shabbos. Says Rabbi Hanina, it was a major concession of the rabbis to allow people to greet each other on Shabbos. Because the greeting disturbs the silence. But it's impolite, it's difficult, people are together, not to greet one another. The greeting disturbs the silence. You know, people think they have to be speaking all the time. Sometimes you've got it even with intimacy. Husbands and wives, close friends, don't have to be speaking. You can be listening. And two people can be together and both can be listening. Two people can't be together and both be speaking. Although you see that more often than you see two people being together and both listening. But there's no contradiction. And if you see two people together and neither of them speaking, what do you think? What's wrong with them? Are they angry with each other? What's the problem? There must be a problem. If you see two people speaking at the same time, you think they're excited. If you see them speaking at the same time, it means neither is listening. So why is anyone speaking? They're crazy. They each has a need to speak, not a need to communicate. If you have a need to communicate, you will only speak to somebody who's listening. Why would you speak to somebody who's speaking if you have a need to communicate? Which means you don't have a need to communicate, you have a need just to speak. But speaking spoils the silence. The only need to speak is if one is communicating. The only need to speak is if somebody is listening. If somebody wants to listen, if somebody needs to listen, then there's a need to speak. Otherwise, one doesn't have to speak. Again, the Orientals have this. They understand this. Oriental philosophy and some of the meditation practices, the beauty that there is and that there can be in silence, in being able to access through silence some of the deeper parts of oneself that one loses completely through speaking. And so Rabbi Hanina says it was a major concession of the Chazal, of the rabbis, that you're allowed even to greet somebody on Shabbos. Rabbi Brechia says, on the other hand, that doesn't mean no activity, that doesn't mean do nothing all Shabbos. This is a time to study the Torah. And study the Torah doesn't mean necessarily to study it with somebody, you could be studying it on one's own. It's a time. What does studying the Torah mean? It's a time to hear. It's a time to listen. When we're learning the Torah, you're hearing God talk. That's what it's for. It's a time to hear. The Gemara says that one of the things we learn from a verse in Yeshayahu, and look how Yeshayahu puts this verse. He talks about Shabbos and he says, "In toshiv mishabbos raglecho." If on Shabbos you will stop walking, in other words, not outside of the tchum, don't go beyond the city limits. We think we've got to go for a walk on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with going for a walk, but you don't have to go for a walk on Shabbos. We have a need to go, a need to move. Shabbos is not about movement. You're allowed to go for a walk for Shabbos, but that's not what Shabbos is for. Shabbos is for Shvu Ish Tachtov. Stay where you are and listen. Don't run anywhere. Stay where you are. Asos chapotecha b'yom kodshi, if you will not take care of your own needs on Shabbos, the korosa l'Shabbos oinig, and you will declare Shabbos a special time of pleasure, you'll be conscious about that. Likadosh Hashem mechubod, the day of holiness of Hashem you will make honorable. V'chi baratoy, and how will you honor the Shabbos? Me asos terochecha, from not doing your normal things. Mimtzei cheftzecha, from not taking care of your normal needs. V'daber dover, and from not talking, says Yeshua. The Gemara says that doesn't mean not talking at all. What does it mean? Shelo yehe diburcho shel Shabbos ki diburcho shel chol, says the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Gamel. That means on Shabbos speak differently from the way you do during the weekday. On the weekday you talk about business, you talk about, on Shabbos talk about different things. Rashi explains, for example, that means kegun mekachomenka, don't talk business. Says Tosfos ve'ein nirul Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, I disagree, that's not what it means. We've already learned from the earlier phrase in Yeshayahu's sentence that you're not supposed to talk about business. This is like the Medrash says in Vayikra, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai used to have a mother, an old mother who used to talk a lot. He said to her, Imo, mother, Shabbosavu, it's Shabbos. Shatka, she kept quiet. So what's Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai saying? He wasn't saying, don't talk about those things on Shabbos. She just used to talk a lot. Mashma, that implies, she'en kol kach l'daber b'Shabbos k'mo b'chol. Speak less on Shabbos than on weekdays. Rishalmi Amrin, and the Tosfos quotes the Rishalmi, that b'torach etiru b'she'el sholem b'Shabbos. It was with difficulty that the rabbis allowed even the greeting on Shabbos. In the Shulchan Aruch, the decision is given that people who enjoy talking about neutral things, not about business, about new things, news, things that are happening, if they enjoy that, they may do so on Shabbos. But if somebody does not enjoy that kind of talk, you should not say those things to make somebody else have a nice Shabbos. The job is not to entertain on Shabbos. The job is not to make conversation to make other people feel comfortable and okay on Shabbos. That's not what it's for. If you don't enjoy talking, don't talk. This is the time for silence. Again, I'm not suggesting that everybody starts being silent on Shabbos, that you stop inviting guests on Shabbos, that you invite guests on Shabbos and you sit around the table and everybody keeps quiet. It's like between the washing and the moitzi, and then after the moitzi somebody says something, everybody says, shh. Didn't you hear the shiur last Monday night? Rabbi Leibman said you're not allowed to talk. And I'm not suggesting that at all. Carry on as normal. But there's just an awareness and a principle, not just for Shabbos, but for life. We all talk too much. We all run around too much. We're all on the move too much. Just watch yourselves. Learn one thing from this, from the shiur. Observe yourself. Don't change anything. Do everything the same as you always have, but notice how much your mouth and your bodies are on the move. You're moving something, you're moving yourself, or you're moving your tongue. Notice how much time in the day. Try logging it. You're doing none of that. How much time of the day are you listening? Listening to other people? Listening to nature? Listening to an author? Listening to God? How much of our day are we just sitting quietly and listening? Hearing? Very, very little of that. How much time is it in if you actually go through the exercise and try that? Stop yourself when you've got some time. Stop yourself for a moment and listen. And you will hear things around you that you were completely unconscious of. Sometimes pleasant sounds, sometimes not such pleasant sounds, sometimes people, sometimes nature. All of a sudden you will hear birds that you never knew were there. You might hear an insect that you didn't know. You might hear traffic that you'd never heard before. You might hear another person speaking that you'd never heard before. Notice, all of a sudden, to what extent we're not tuned in because we're so involved in movement. The Torah wants us 1/7 of our lives to be in a mode of listening rather than a mode of action and a mode of talking. So the keeping of Shabbos, the desisting from an active technological life goes far beyond that. And what I'm suggesting is even those of us who keep Shabbos meticulously, we keep that part of it, that we substitute our physical activity, don't go to work, chas v'shalom, don't turn on the television, that we substitute it with other activity. We get busy, we make ourselves busy, because we don't like silence. We feel discomforted by silence. And we shouldn't feel discomforted by silence. We should learn how to utilize silence. We should learn how to thrive in silence. We should learn how to listen to ourselves in silence. How to listen to our situations in silence, and how to listen to those around about us in silence, and how to listen to God Himself in silence. That's part of this very special law. Stay where you are. Don't run anywhere. Don't have to tour. Don't have to go on walks. You don't have to socialize. You don't have to go out for lunch. You don't have to have people for lunch. You can be quiet on your own and learn, read, listen, hear, replenish yourself, refresh yourself. That's also okay. That's also one of the ways that we honor Shabbos, that we honor God, and that we honor ourselves. Thank you.